Unbound Theatre presents Sounds and Sweet Airs, the complete works of William Shakespeare. Hamlet, Act 2.
How now, Ophelia? What's the matter?
Oh, my lord. My lord, I have been so affrighted.
With what, in the name of God?
My lord, as I was sewn in my chamber, Lord Hamlet, with his doublet all unbraced, no hat upon his head, his stockings fouled, ungartered and down givy to his ankle, pale as his shirt, his knees knocking each other, and with a look so piteous in purport as if he'd been loosed out of hell to speak of horrors, he comes before me.
Mad for thy love?
My lord, I do not know, but truly I do fear it.
What said he?
He took me by the wrist and held me hard. Then goes he to the length of all his arm, and with his other hand, thus over his brow, he falls to such perusal of my face as he would draw it. Long stayed he so. At last, a little shaken of mine arm, and thrice his head thus waving up and down, he raised a sigh so piteous and profound, as it did seem to shatter all his bulk and end his being. That done, he lets me go. And with his head over his shoulder turned, he seemed to find his way without his eyes, for out o' doors he went without their helps, and to the last bended their light on me.
Come, go with me. I will go seek the king. This is the very ecstasy of love. I am sorry. What? Have you given him any hard words of late?
No, my good lord. But, as you did command, I did repel his fetters and denied his access to me.
That hath made him mad. I am sorry that with better heed and judgment I had not quoted him. Come, go we to the king. This must be known, which being kept close might move more grief to hide than hate to utter love.
Welcome, dear Rosencrantz and Guildenstern. Moreover, that we much did long to see you. The need we have to use you did provoke our hasty sending. Something have you heard of Hamlet's transformation? What it should be, more than his father's death, that thus have put him so much from the understanding of himself, I cannot dream of. I entreat you both to draw him unto pleasures, and to gather so much as from occasion you may glean, whether aught to us unknown afflicts him thus, that opened lies within our remedy.
Good gentleman, he hath much talked of you, and sure I am two men there are not living to whom he more adheres. For the supply and profit of our hope, your visitation shall receive such thanks as fits a king's remembrance.
Both your majesties might, by the sovereign power you have of us, put your dread pleasures more into command than to entreaty.
But we both obey, and here give up ourselves.
Thanks, Rosencrantz and gentle Guildenstern.
Thanks, Guildenstern and gentle Rosencrantz.
The ambassadors from Norway, my good lord, are joyfully returned.
Thou still hast been the father of good news.
Have I, my lord? I hold my duty as I hold my soul. And I do think, or else this brain of mine hunts not the trail of policy so sure as it hath used to do, that I have found the very cause of Hamlet's lunacy.
Oh, speak of that. That I do long to hear. He tells me, my dear Gertrude, he hath found the head and source of all your son's distemper.
I doubt it is no other but the main. His father's death and our overhasty marriage.
Well, we shall sift him.
My liege and madam, to expostulate what majesty should be, what duty is, why day is day, night night, and time time, were nothing but to waste night, day, and time. Therefore, since brevity is the soul of wit, and tediousness the limbs and outward flourishes, I will be brief. Your noble son is mad. Mad, call I it, for to define true madness, what is it but to be nothing else but mad? But let that go.
More matter with less art.
Madam, I swear I use no art at all. I have a daughter, have while she is mine, who in her duty and obedience, Mark, hath given me this. Now gather and surmise. To the celestial and my soul's idol, the most beautified Ophelia. That's an ill phrase, a vile phrase. Beautified is a vile phrase. But you shall hear thus. In her excellent white bosom, these, etc.
Came this from Hamlet to her?
Good madam, stay a while. I will be faithful. Doubt thou the stars are fire, doubt that the sun doth move. Doubt truth to be a liar, but never doubt I love. Most dear lady, thine evermore, Hamlet. This in obedience hath my daughter shown me, and more above.
But how hath she received his love?
What do you think of me?
As of a man, faithful and honourable.
I would fain prove so. But what might you think, when I had seen this hot love on the wing, as I perceived it, I precepts gave her that she should lock herself from his resort, admit no messengers, receive no tokens. Which done, she took the fruits of my advice, and he, repulsed, a short tale to make, fell into a sadness, then into a fast, thence to a watch, thence into a weakness, thence to a lightness, and by this declension into the madness wherein he now raves, and all we mourn for.
Do you think 'tis this?
It may be, very like.
Hath there been such a time, I'd fain know that I have positively said 'tis so, when it proved otherwise?
Not that I know.
Take this from this, if this be otherwise. If circumstances lead me, I will find where truth is hid, though it be hid indeed within the centre.
How may we try it further?
You know, sometimes he walks for hours together here in the lobby.
So he does indeed.
At such a time, I'll loose my daughter to him. Be you and I behind an arras, then mark the encounter.
But look, where sadly the poor wretch comes reading.
Away, I do beseech you both, away. I'll board him presently. How does my good Lord Hamlet?
Well, God a mercy.
Do you know me, my lord?
Excellent well. You are a fishmonger.
Not I, my lord.
Then I would you were so honest a man.
Honest, my lord?
Aye, sir. To be honest as this world goes is to be one man picked out of 10,000.
That's very true, my lord.
For if the sun breed maggots in a dead dog, being a god-kissing carrion, have you a daughter?
I have, my lord.
Let her not walk in the sun. Conception is a blessing, but not as your daughter may conceive. Friend, look to it.
How say you by that? Still harping on my daughter, yet he knew me not at first. He said I was a fishmonger. He is far gone, far gone. And truly, in my youth, I suffered much extremity for love, very near this. I'll speak to him again. What do you read, my lord?
Words. Words. Words.
What is the matter, my lord?
Between who?
I mean, the matter that you read, my lord.
Slanders, sir. For the satirical rogue says here that old men have grey beards, that their faces are wrinkled, and that they have a plentiful lack of wit, together with most weak hams. All which, sir, though I most powerfully and potently believe, yet I hold it not honesty to have it thus set down.
Though this be madness, yet there's method in it. Will you walk out of the air, my lord?
Into my grave.
Indeed, that is out of the air. How pregnant sometimes his replies are. I will leave him and suddenly contrive the means of meeting between him and my daughter. My lord, I will take my leave of you.
You cannot, sir, take from me anything that I will more willingly part with all, except my life. Except my life. Except my life.
Fare you well, my lord.
These tedious old fools.
My honoured lord.
My most dear lord.
My excellent good friends, how dost thou, Guildenstern? Ah, Rosencrantz, good lads. What's the news?
None, my lord, but that the world has grown honest.
Then is doomsday near. But your news is not true. Let me question, more in particular, what have you, my good friends, deserved at the hands of fortune that she sends you to prison hither?
Prison, my lord?
Denmark's a prison.
Then is the world one.
A goodly one, in which there are many confines, wards and dungeons, Denmark being one of the worst.
We think not so, my lord.
Why then, 'tis none to you, for there is nothing either good or bad, but thinking makes it so. To me, it is a prison.
Why then, your ambition makes it one. 'Tis too narrow to your mind.
Oh God, I could be bounded in a nutshell and count myself a king of infinite space, were it not that I have bad dreams. No such matter. In the beaten way of friendship, what make you at Elsinore?
To visit you, my lord, no other occasion.
Were you not sent for? Is it your own inclining? Is it a free visitation? Come, deal justly with me. Come, nay, speak.
What should we say, my lord?
Why, anything but to the purpose. I know the good king and queen have sent for you.
To what end, my lord?
That you must teach me. Be even and direct with me, whether you were sent for or no.
What say you?
If you love me, hold not off.
My lord, we were sent for.
I will tell you why. So shall my anticipation prevent your discovery, and your secrecy to the king and queen moult no feather. I have of late, but wherefore I know not, lost all my mirth, forgone all custom of exercises, and indeed it goes so heavily with my disposition that this goodly frame, the earth, seems to me a sterile promontory. This most excellent canopy, the air, look you. This brave, o'erhanging firmament. This majestical roof, fretted with golden fire. Why, it appears no other thing to me than a foul and pestilent congregation of vapours. What a piece of work is a man. How noble in reason, how infinite in faculty. In form and moving, how express and admirable. In action, how like an angel. In apprehension, how like a god. The beauty of the world. The paragon of animals. And yet to me, what is this quintessence of dust? Man delights not me. No, nor woman neither, though by your smiling you seem to say so.
My lord, there was no such stuff in my thoughts.
Why did you laugh then when I said man delights not me?
To think, my lord, if you delight not in man, what lenten entertainment the players shall receive from you? We coated them on the way, and hither are they coming to offer you service.
Players? What players are they?
Oh, my lord, the tragedians of the city, those that you took delight to see so often.
Gentlemen, you are welcome to Elsinore. Your hands, come, you are welcome. But my uncle father and aunt mother are deceived.
In what, my dear lord?
I am but mad north-northwest. When the wind is southerly, I know a hawk from a hound.
My lord, I have news to tell you.
My lord, I have news to tell you.
The actors are come hither, my
buzz,
lord.
Buzz.
Upon mine honour...
They came each actor on his ass.
The best actors in the world, either for tragedy, comedy, history, pastoral... Pastoral comical, historical pastoral, tragical historical, tragical comical historical pastoral, scene indivisible, or poem.
You are welcome, masters, welcome all. I am glad to see you well. Welcome, good friends. Come, we'll have a speech straight. Come, give us a taste of your quality. Come, a passionate speech.
What speech, my good lord?
I heard thee speak me a speech once, but it was never acted. 'Twas Aeneas' tale to Dido, and thereabout of it especially, where he speaks of Priam's slaughter. If it live in your memory, begin at this line. The hellish Pyrrhus, old grandsire Priam seeks. So, proceed you.
Anon he finds him, striking too short at Greeks. His antique sword, rebellious to his arm, lies where it falls, repugnant to command. Unequal matched, Pyrrhus at Priam drives, yet in rage strikes wide. But with the whiff and wind of his fell sword, the unnerved father falls. Then, senseless Ilium, seeming to feel this blow, with flaming top, stoops to its base, and with a hideous crash takes prisoner Pyrrhus' ear, who, for lo, his sword, which was declining upon the milky head of Reverend Priam, seemed in the air to stick. So as a painted tyrant Pyrrhus stood, and like a neutral to his will and matter, did nothing. But, as we often see, against some storm, a silence in the heavens, the rack stands still, the bold wind speechless, and the orb below as hush as death. Anon the dreadful thunder doth rend the region. So, after Pyrrhus' pause, aroused vengeance sets him new a work, and never did the Cyclops' hammers fall on Mars' armor, forged from proof return, with less remorse than Pyrrhus' bleeding sword now falls on Priam. Out, out, thou strumpet fortune!
This is too long.
It shall to the barbers with your beard. Prithee, say on, come to Hecuba.
But who? Oh, who did see the mobled queen?
The mobled queen?
That's good. A mobled queen is good.
Run barefoot, up and down, threatening the flames with bissom rheum. A clout upon that head where late the diadem stood, and for a robe about her lank and all o'er teemed loins, a blanket in the alarm of fear caught up. Who this had seen, with tongue in venom steeped against fortune's state, would treason have pronounced. But if the gods themselves did see her then, when she saw Pyrrhus make malicious sport in mincing with his sword her husband's limbs, the instant burst of clamour that she made, unless things mortal move them not at all, would make milch the burning eyes of heaven, and passion in the gods.
Look, whether he has not turned his colour and has tears in his eyes, I prithee, no more.
'Tis well. I'll have thee speak at the rest soon. Good my lord, will you see the players well bestowed? Do you hear? Let them be well used, for they are the abstract and brief chronicles of the time.
My lord, I will use them according to their desert.
God's bodikins, man, much better. Take them in.
Come, sirs.
Follow him, friends. We'll hear a play tomorrow. Dost thou hear me, old friend? Can you play The Murder of Gonzago?
Aye, my lord.
We'll have tomorrow night. You could, for a need, study a speech of some dozen or 16 lines, which I would set down in certint, could you not?
Aye, my lord.
Very well. Follow that lord, and look you mock him not. My good friends, I'll leave you till night. You are welcome to Elsinore.
Good, my lord.
Aye, so. God be with you. Oh, what a rogue and peasant slave am I. Is it not monstrous that this player here, but in a fiction, in a dream of passion, could force his soul so to his whole conceit that from her working all his visage wand? Tears in his eyes, distraction in his aspect, a broken voice, and his whole function suiting with forms to his conceit, and all for nothing. For Hecuba. What's Hecuba to him, or he to Hecuba, that he should weep for her? What would he do, had he the motive and the cue for passion that I have? He would drown the stage with tears, and cleave the general ear with horrid speech, make mad the guilty and appall the free, confound the ignorant, and amaze indeed the very faculties of eyes and ears. Yet I, a dull and muddy-mettled rascal, peak like John o'Dreams, unpregnant of my cause, and can say nothing. No, not for a king, upon whose property and most dear life a damned defeat was made, am I a coward? Swoons, I should take it. For it cannot be, but I am pigeon-livered, and lack gall to make oppression bitter, or ere this I should have fatted all the region kites with this slave's offal about my brain. I have heard that guilty creatures sitting at a play have, by the very cunning of the scene, been struck so to the soul that presently they have proclaimed their malefactions. For murder though it have no tongue, will speak with most miraculous organ. I'll have these players play something like the murder of my father before mine uncle. I'll observe his looks. I'll tent him to the quick. If he but blench, I know my course. The spirit that I have seen may be the devil, and the devil hath power to assume a pleasing shape, yea, and perhaps out of my weakness and my melancholy, abuses me to damn me. I'll have grounds more relative than this. The play's the thing, wherein I'll catch the conscience of the king.
Hamlet was written by William Shakespeare. It starred Katie Herbert as Hamlet, Philip Donnelly as Claudius, Jack Knight as Gertrude, Stephanie Hull as Ophelia, Robert Aldington as Polonius, Beatrice Benedick as Rosencrantz, Mickey Scott as Guildenstern, and Daniel McGinty as the first player. Title music was by Dream Cave, additional music by John Bjork and Philip Ayres, and sound recording by Stefan Medhurst. It was produced and directed by Dario Knight for Unbound.